Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, February 1st, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how are things?
Very good, thank you.
So it looks like there might be another lockdown coming here in Paris. You know that I think I mentioned to you, we've already had this curfew, but we might get restricted further, which will put us more in line with what you've been experiencing. So I wanted to ask you, is there anything I should be watching or reading with all my extra time?
Yeah, I don't know. I've exhausted most of my watching. It is challenging. I mean, we're basically locked down now to the middle of March, I think. So These are challenging times, but we've all got to stay safe and hopefully roll out the vaccine and start to recover through that process.
Yeah, and actually, I know you mentioned you had been reading some good books, and I had promised our listeners that I would share a recommendation. And so the one that I read that I've really enjoyed is called Beneath a Scarlet Sky by Mark Sullivan, and it's a World War II story about an Italian guy who helps a bunch of Jewish Italians escape through the Alps into Switzerland and then ends up working as kind of a working for the Nazis in Italy as a spy to kind of help the Allied forces. So anyway, really good book. And it's kind of not really, it's, you know, nonfiction, Alex. So it might be up your alley a little bit.
Nice.
So what's been going on the MBA admissions side of things? I know it's like we're full on interview season now, right? But give me a recap.
Yeah. I mean, schools are now sort of more and more schools are rolling out their interview invites for the round two, section. So, I mean, examples of schools this week, Austin, McCombs is one of the schools that have rolled out interview invites. Several others. Also, the odd thing, Graham, is we haven't heard from HBS yet, or at least at the time we're recording this, in terms of when they're going to release their round two decisions. Typically, they will let us know through a blog post. I've been going to that site every day, checking their blog, and it's very inactive at this point. So a little bit odd because, you know, upcoming this week, Fuqua is a school that will be rolling out interview invites this week that hasn't done so yet. And typically the back end of this week would be about the right time frame for HBS to roll out their interview invites, whether it's the back end of this week or early next week. So for those folks, definitely look out. So that sort of February 5th, 6th time frame for it would be the same as last year. But as I said, HBS is usually very transparent in terms of letting us know when this date is. So hopefully by the time people listen to this podcast, it's already out there.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you and probably everyone who applied to HBS are checking that blog. But yeah, hopefully by the time this airs, we've heard from their admissions dean and know when interviews are coming. In the meantime, obviously everyone knows about Clear Admit's interview guides that you can download that have all the common questions and tips on how to answer them. Those are, you know, things that we update each and every year. And then there's the interview archive on the site where, I mean, I've been seeing the reports flowing in to that archive. So there's lots of good content to go through, and that's free. So take a peek if you're prepping. Alex, I'm also happy to report this week that we've been getting more reviews. In fact, we had at least two or three, I think, and I'm only going to read one because I can't fit them all in this week. But this one is great. The title is Just-in-Time Knowledge for the Serious MBA Applicant. And the reviewer writes, Alex and Graham are phenomenal hosts. They provide clear, relevant, and insightful comments into the black box of MBA admissions. I started preparing a few weeks ago to apply for a top MBA and have already listened to more than a dozen past episodes for inspiration and information. Keep up the good work. And then they promise to submit an ApplyWire entry when they have their GMAT result in hand. So we look forward to that. And then I should mention there was a PS. This person writes, I have never once fallen asleep while listening to you guys. I'm often driving, cooking, or changing diapers, which those are, by the way, three activities during which falling asleep would be really bad to do. So that's good. We're keeping some people awake, I guess, Alex.
No, that's very good. And obviously we always appreciate the feedback through the reviews. I did want to give a quick shout out, Graham, and I hope you're okay with this. But shout out to one of our colleagues in the industry, Linda Abraham, who's recorded her 400th podcast. over the last week. So she must have been doing this a lot longer than we have, Graham.
Yeah, no,
Linda. But I actually listened to the podcast on LinkedIn, and Linda's obviously a real seasoned veteran of this industry who, during my time at Wharton, actually, I met with Linda on the Wharton campus and so forth. So, yeah, hats off to Linda. She's been doing it a lot longer than we have, Graham.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, I saw that go by on LinkedIn as well. And, you know, yeah, 400 episodes is a big milestone. We'll get there eventually. Yeah. I know we're up over 100 or something in total, and I think this is the 82nd episode of Wiretaps. I did want to mention, we have 79 people who have rated our podcast on Apple's platform. So I'd love to see that 80th review or rating come in. So if you're listening on Apple's platform, you know, it takes like 2 seconds to give us a rating. Would much appreciate that. Another thing I wanted to mention is that if you have questions, just send an email to info@clearadmit.com. Use the subject wiretaps, and Alex and I will try to answer your questions on the show. Alex, the only other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, on the website, we've had some good content. Obviously, we did Real Humans for Vanderbilt and for Washington University in St. Louis. We also covered a $5 million anonymous gift that was given to Ross from an alum, which is all going to be used for scholarships. So that was kind of cool to hear. And then there's something we didn't cover, and that is the Economist MBA ranking. So do you want to talk about that ranking?
I mean, quite frankly, I just find it the most bizarre ranking in business school admissions, even in a good year. Mm-hmm. Their methodology just creates a ranking that, frankly, Graham, I don't understand The Economist. It's a great brand. I hold their magazine in very high esteem. I cannot see how this ranking supports their brand. And then, as we know, this year, several schools, well, most top schools, have rankings fatigue, they're dealing with COVID-19, they chose not to participate. So not only is their ranking methodology weird, but most of the top schools didn't participate, yet they still went ahead and produced the ranking. I just think it's not worth the time, effort, and energy even to look at it.
Yeah, it's strange. 14 of the top 16 U.S. schools did not take part. And also LBS, INSEAD, Cambridge, Oxford, none of those schools took part either. So yeah, so it was a strange ranking. I think enough said on it, because I agree. It just, I couldn't agree more about, like, I think The Economist, the magazine, is terrific. Yeah. You know, it's really solid.
Yeah. To me, it's completely bizarre that The Economist is going down this route.
Yeah.
To me, If I could read one thing every week, it would be The Economist. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't at the moment because I've got lots of other things on my plate. But if I had to choose one thing to read every week, whatever, I hold their magazine in very high esteem. This ranking, no.
Yeah, agreed. So, all right, well, let's move on and get into our candidates, because we have some really fun candidates to discuss this week and some, you know, pretty good admissions issues that we're going to bring up as a result of that. So, I appreciate you picking these out. So let's move on and we'll talk about Wiretaps candidate number one. So this candidate has Columbia, MIT, Wharton, and Yale on their target list, and they're looking to start school next fall. They've been working in private equity, and they're hoping to stay in that domain after business school. They've got 4.5 years of work experience across London, as well as West Africa, and the GRE score is a 314, GPA a 3.0, and this person does some volunteer work outside of their job, and they've also they wanted to clarify the Wharton Lauder degree, because that's a joint degree that's offered there. And so, Alex, you had some dialogue with this candidate, and they shared some additional details, and so I wondered if you could walk us through some of that and just give us your take on this candidate.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, Graham, this candidate is sort of, there's some exceptional stuff here, and there's some poor stuff here, and I don't see a lot in between.
Yeah.
So it's quite perplexing based on the information that we have. And then sort of to exacerbate that, this candidate's targeting the very best schools. And maybe that might be a little bit out of reach. We'll see. But maybe if they'd have gone maybe a tier lower, still very good schools, that might have been more appropriate. But again, we'll see. On the very positive side, I mean, this person's work experience looks absolutely outstanding, Graham. So I'm going to read their comment just to get your perspective on this. I worked in investment banking in London and Nigeria for 2 years before transitioning to private equity. Currently, I work at one of the biggest PE firms based out of Africa. I was promoted in record time in my iBanking position and PE job. I spent most of my third and final year at college looking after, well, that was to explain the low GPA. But to me, just in those couple of sentences, Graham, this person sounds off the charts.
Yeah, it's very unusual for, as you know, getting a promotion in investment banking really quickly like that and then moving into private equity is usually reserved for the kind of top portion, the what do they say, the creme de la creme of the pool, right? And so, yeah, this is impressive. And I also like the fact that this person, who I'm going to guess is maybe Nigerian, in origin, and, you know, made it to London to do investment banking and then has come back to Africa. So it's interesting. And yeah, they've had like an accelerated career. So that there's a lot to like on that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, if you're reading the application, you're reading this stuff, you're thinking, yes, absolutely, very highbrow, top schools, and as we talked about before coming on air, Graham, this person has a career in PE, wants to remain in PE, and therefore you should really be targeting the top schools in order to do that. Clearly, your access to PE at very top schools is going to be a little bit easier than the next bracket down, next tier down. And we all know this. But then, so what else do we look at? Their 3.0 GPA. So how did they get this start in investment banking if their college record wasn't absolutely fantastic is a question that I would have, and I'd be able to explore that in the application. So hopefully they describe that. And obviously there is context around this 3.0 GPA. They looked after their sick father. So we need to take personal priorities into account, and that's very noble and very important. But then you combine that GPA with the 314 on the GRE, and I think they've taken the test twice, Graham, so it's not like they just went in cold, got a score to apply. I mean, it seems like they've dedicated time to that piece of the process. So frankly, that combination of the 314 and 3.0 and the absolutely stellar career experience just has me perplexed, quite frankly. I don't know what to advise.
Yeah, I mean, I thought about this at length as we were getting ready to record the show, and I worry that these numbers will keep him out or her out. I just, given the school selection, and it just feels like a no-go for me. And yet I understand, like, to stay in big time private equity, you want to go to a top school with a brand name that has the network. And so I am concerned. I do wonder if this person's not, it's not like they're 30 years old or anything. You know, they've got 4.5 years of experience. I do wonder if buckling down and acing the GRE or GMAT and then reapplying would work. I mean, we'll see. They've already applied to these schools. So we're going to find out in short order whether they get interview invitations and whether they convert to getting in. But I'm just worried that for now, the combination of, those academic stats, GRE and GPA, may keep them out. Or, I mean, maybe they land on a wait list or something. But it's tough because these very top schools, I mean, it's like you need the numbers to be in the conversation. And I'm just worried that they might be falling out of the conversation based on these numbers. So, I mean, we'll see how it plays out. But I think they could always reapply, especially if they can stay in their job and continue to excel there. But that's my take on this. I agree with you, though, it's not an easy decision. There's a kind of a Jekyll and Hyde when you look at the career side versus the academic side.
Yeah, yeah. As I say, I'm perplexed. I'd be very interested to see how this candidate fares, if they're willing to share that as they come back. I mean, I wish them the best of luck. And again, I think their career stuff sounds phenomenal. And potentially, this could be a very high impact individual in the long run. If you're doing private equity in Africa, clearly you've got the opportunity and the access to have huge impact on the continent. So, So, yeah, I mean, I'm just perplexed, Graham.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been perplexed, quite frankly. I've always had a pretty interesting, or not necessarily interesting, but a pretty firm opinion on each of our candidates. But this one, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
If they turn around and say, you know what, I did actually get an admit at Sloan, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, it's fair. We will see. And I do wish them the best of luck. I know I'm a little down on the candidacy in terms of the admissions odds, but I, you know, obviously want to see this person excel. So thanks for sharing that profile. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has seven schools on the target list, and they're not going to be starting business school till 2022. So they have a little bit of time, and they're looking at currently Columbia, Cornell, Dartmouth, LBS, NYU, Wharton, and Yale. And this person's had a pre-MBA career that has entailed military, bulge bracket sales and trading, and then Big Four consulting. So pretty a good batch of experiences. They want to get into consulting after business school, and they're looking at, you know, Bain, BCG, McKinsey, LEK. Their GRE score is a 320. GPA is a 3.6, and they've had 7 years of experience in total across that military, sales and trading, and consulting. They're in New York, and they would go post-MBA, they'd like to be, it sounds like East Coast or South, because they say anywhere, just not the West Coast or Chicago. So the interesting thing about this candidate, which they shared in their notes, is that they enlisted in the military and served as an airborne infantryman. And then graduated from a top liberal arts college on a military merit-based scholarship. After the military, they then worked in sales and trading and are now at their current firm. And they're active with a veterans DEI group, so diversity, equity, and inclusion. And they also do some other work with veterans organizations and with a focus around transitioning from the military to higher ed. So Alex, what do you make of this candidate?
Well, I mean, I really like this candidate in terms of, I'm a big fan of bootstrappers, and I'm guessing or making an inference that this candidate is potentially a bootstrapper in terms of they went into the military as an enlisted soldier and then ultimately got a degree from a top liberal arts college and has sort of embarked on this sales and trading and Big Four consulting experiences. So to me, that sounds really interesting. Looks like they've navigated their pathway extremely well, done very well, taken advantage of opportunities presented to them, taken advantage of those opportunities very well, and so on and so forth. So there's a lot in my mind to like about this pathway, assuming it's effectively articulated in their candidacy. I'm not quite sure where they are in terms of their age. You know, what was your perspective, Graham? They went to the military, then they did 4 years of liberal arts college, and then they did sales and trading, and then Big Four. Or were they doing the liberal arts work, do you think, during the time of their military? I don't think they could have done that, right? They didn't mention they were doing it online.
No, I think the way you first described it is accurate. They went into the military probably at age 18, maybe did several years, then got this merit scholarship. Then they transitioned out of the military into sales and trading and now consulting.
Yeah, I only ask because they might be in their early 30s or late 20s, but they might be a 1 or 2 years beyond the sort of median age of a typical candidate. If that's the case, just making sure that they articulate well how they're going to fit into the academic environments, the cultures, that they're going to fully engage not only academically, but in their extracurriculars, as well as in their sort of career management aspect, that sort of three pillars of what you end up doing during your business school experience. So sometimes older candidates might be a little less engaged in some of these aspects, or at least that's the stereotype. And they've done some stuff in diversity, equity, and inclusion, and so on and so forth, Graham. So quite frankly, a lot to like here. The GRE is a little troubling. It's not as our first candidate where it's going to raise a red flag, but it's definitely, 320 puts you in the picture, but it's certainly not a standout score. But obviously the 3.6 GPA helps. I would be interested to know to make sure that the quant aspect of the profile is strong and solid. If not, then maybe make sure you've done HBS Core or you sign up for it now, or MBA Math. I imagine because of their post undergraduate experience in you know, sales and trading and Big Four consulting, that they actually did do some analytics and that type of coursework through their liberal arts degree. But that would be one of my questions, Graham.
Yeah, I agree. The GRE doesn't put them out of the running or anything, but it's low. I like the 3.6 from a top 10 liberal arts college. That's a good signal to me. So I think they could overcome it, but I do agree with you. If there's a limited amount of quantitative coursework on their transcript, and if the GRE quant is low, then taking a, you know, MBA math or a stats class or an accounting class online, whatever they need to do, HBX Core, to show, I mean, they're not applying till next season, so they have time to kind of get their ducks in a row. I mean, the other thing they could do is just buckle down and try to get a 325 plus on the GRE over the coming months. That would help too. I do think that this person will get into one of the schools they're applying to. I mean, they have 7 schools on the list. It's a somewhat tight range, but it is a range. It's across kind of the top 15 or top 16 or so. And so I think they'll land somewhere. And I think they have a really interesting profile. And one of the things I like about their profile is that they've already done the military to private sector transition, because that is sometimes a little bit of a fear in the admissions reader when it comes to military candidates. It's, you know, is this person going to be able to make the transition from military to kind of the civilian world? And this person's already done that. So that's good. I wanted to ask you a question about this candidate, Alex, and that is, I'm going to put you on the spot, but if they have to get, let's say, 2 letters of recommendation, what would you advise them to do in terms of, you know, they have these 3 experiences, military, sales and trading, and now Big Four consulting. Would you have them just fish in the kind of recent work experience pool, or do you think a military rec makes sense too?
Yeah, actually, that's a very good question, Graham. Certainly something from Big Four consulting, if that's your most recent experience, needs to be on the table. You know, as we would always advise your immediate supervisor or someone that knows you really well in your current work setting. But yeah, you have a bit more freedom in terms of using that second recommender for the schools that ask for 2. Obviously, we're seeing more and more schools, I think, only asking for 1, or at least there are some schools that only ask for 1, or maybe even 1 or 2 schools don't even ask for recs anymore. But nevertheless, yeah, there is an opportunity to go back to military, but there's also an opportunity to dip into the sales and trading experience. Frankly, Graham, I would think I would look at who's my second recommender who can really add value to the story that I'm telling.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no one right answer, I don't think. It's about your story, the personal story of the individual candidate, to figure out who that second recommender should be.
True. And if this candidate happens to have a kind of a mentor who saw them get the merit scholarship to go off to, you know, from the military, who saw them go off to the, you know, to get the scholarship and the undergraduate degree, and who maybe has continued to, you know, observe them in their diversity, equity, and inclusion veterans group work, or if there's someone that's kind of followed this whole path that's military based, that could be interesting to me. But I agree with you. You just got to go with the 2 individuals who can add the most to your candidacy, ideally one of them being a current direct supervisor. But yeah, good candidate. Appreciate, I wanted to thank them for their service and also for their ApplyWire entry, because very interesting story. And I wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, best of luck.
All right, so let's talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a DecisionWire entry that we received, and it's from a candidate who is undecided about where to attend. They applied to Harvard, Michigan, MIT, Stanford, Wharton, and Darden. And they ended up with offers at Michigan with an $80,000 scholarship. They also received acceptances at MIT and Wharton with no scholarship dollars, and Darden with a $35,000 scholarship. They're going to be starting next fall, and they would love to work in tech. They'd love to go work at Apple or Google or Microsoft. GMAT score was a 760, and the GPA was a 3.9. They're in the south of the United States. And they're basically, in the notes, have revealed that they're deciding between Sloan and Wharton. So they've put aside the Ross and Darden acceptances and honed in on Sloan and Wharton. And they're interested in emerging tech and tech ethics. which they say makes MIT appealing. But the size and breadth of Wharton's network is a big draw. And they wrote, hoping to be on the West Coast post-MBA and interested in startup investing long-term, which may also give Wharton an edge. What are people's thoughts? So Alex, you actually, you know, both you and I chimed in on this one, but then so did members of our community. So what do you want to walk us through the kind of thought process here?
Yeah, the thought process is the dude's got to go to Wharton. That seems very straightforward from the folks chiming in. I mean, obviously, it's a very difficult decision, and I shouldn't be flippant about the decision. And these are decisions that you make. Ultimately, once you've made the decision, you'll never look back. This isn't a buyer's remorse or whatever the right term is, where you make one choice and then you always wonder how the other choice would be. Once you make that choice, you will go all in and have a terrific experience. I mean, I've seen that time and again with MBA candidates over the years. But this is a difficult choice, right? The options are, MIT Sloan, outstanding program, and which would go deeper into the tech space and probably sort of, the stronger sort of direct network in that particular space. Or you go a little bit broader with Wharton that has sort of more resources, more breadth of resources and so on and so forth. And then you look at, you can combine that sort of decision, breadth versus depth, with, well, where do these schools rank? And we, in the tiered system that we sort of focus on, you would argue that Wharton is in a tier slightly above Sloan. Wharton's an odd school. It sort of sits between Harvard, Stanford at the very top, but then slightly above the rest of the M7, or at least that's the data that we see when we look at decision-wide decisions and so on and so forth. But nevertheless, very interesting. And the nice thing about this decision is, and a couple of other folks who are wrestling with the same decision also chimed in on this candidate's issue. So what I'll do, Graham, is I'll just read out their thoughts and then I'll let you respond directly.
Okay.
And maybe I'll ask you to make the pitch for Sloan, since everyone else is pitching for Wharton. But this is the first responder. It's also admitted to Wharton and Sloan with similar goals, had the temptation to lean to the tech-centric MIT environment, but will be matriculating at Wharton for the reasons mentioned, as well as Wharton's recent demonstrated commitment to tech, entrepreneurship and innovation. Quite frankly, when I read that, Graham, I was like, well, when I was at Wharton in 2005, we expressed a commitment to tech, entrepreneurship and innovation. So I'm not sure how recent that is. I do think it's something that Wharton has been pushing for several years. Another poster response echoing the previous remarks was accepted to Wharton and Sloan this round. I'm coming from FANG, which is an acronym for Facebook and Amazon and Apple and Netflix and Google, and looking to use tech for social impact ethics similar to you. It was super tough, but I will also be matriculating at Wharton to stretch myself given Wharton's breadth in my gaps, i.e. finance, marketing, general management, and to be around more diverse class compared to Sloan, which is 40-50% engineering background. I wasn't ready to limit myself to just tech, and Wharton's name network is a huge draw. Best of luck. Interesting to get your thoughts, Graham.
Yeah, I mean, I think, first of all, this is why we built Decision Wire, so that people on the site who are in similar situations or who've already made a decision in the past can counsel those facing these challenging decisions. Yeah. I mean, this candidate, as you said, they're not going to go wrong wherever they choose. The one thing I would point out is that, I guess I'd need to fact check that 40-50% engineering backgrounds. I'm not sure that that's accurate. It might be, but it seems high to me for the MIT kind of Sloan student body. But I understand what this person is saying, which is that Sloan is, has this reputation for techies. And so given this person's goals are in that domain, you get it. But then at the same time, I understand Wharton has this breadth and depth. And, I think one of the things that didn't come up at all is that MIT's program is a lot smaller than Wharton's program. And so it's going to be a closer knit community in some respects. And so that's, that means it's just a different learning environment. And so if this person has a, real feel for like wanting a small program or smaller program, MIT might make sense. I do, though, frankly, understand the rationale for choosing Wharton here. I even chimed in with a comment of my own on this post where I pointed out that Wharton has that campus in San Francisco, Wharton West, and that, you know, MBA students, pandemic aside, which ideally by the time this person would be in this situation will be beyond COVID, you can go and spend a semester at Wharton West in San Francisco, which could be ideal for someone who has interests in startup investing, tech, project management on the tech side. So it's it's not an easy decision, but I absolutely agree with you that we see time and time again on Decision Wire and in the data that the site gathers that Wharton is a little bit a notch above the rest of the M7, save obviously Harvard and Stanford. And so it makes sense to me. I also think I personally really resonated with the comment about kind of pushing yourself.
Yeah.
So for example, when I went, you know, I went off to Wharton and over HBS because I really wanted to push myself on the quantitative side. And I was actually worried that not having much of a quantitative background, that Wharton would be better at teaching me those things and forcing me to do it and not all by the case method, you know. So in any event, there are all kinds of reasons that people have, but I understand the debate here. And I do tend to side with the advice that's been given, which is probably leans Wharton here, it seems, overall. So that's my point of view. Anything else you want to say on this one, though?
Yeah, better not share this podcast with Rod.
You're referring to Rod Garcia at MIT. Yeah, I love MIT, too. They have a fantastic facility right on the river in Cambridge there.
Yeah.
And it's a small program. You really do feel like you're tended to, you know, by the team there. So it's a tough call, but I understand the advice that's being given here. So again, thanks to that person for sharing. And hopefully, you know, they're appreciative of the community members that have chimed in. Alex, did you have anything else for this week? Otherwise, I mean, great job picking out these candidates, as always, and you know, we'll be back in a week's time to talk about some other candidates, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I'm very proud of myself for knowing what that acronym stood for. Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, Google, FAN. Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's the little things, I guess.
yes.
All right.
Anyway, yeah, best of luck, everyone, and please stay safe. Good luck.
Yeah, we'll see you in 1 week's time. Thanks again, Alex.